Good evening, Dave. How are you today? How's it going?
Good, thanks, Mike. How you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks. It's been a busy week, but glad to get on here and just to chew the fat about things all related to sport and technology. So obviously, both of us, we've been involved in this Apollo journey for the last several years. So Dave, like, give us a bit of a background into how the idea of Apollo first developed.
Sure. In the early 2000s, I was the head physio at Leeds United, and we started using Polar teams. And this is way before GPS. And then there was a company called Prozone, which was a camera tracking system, which sort of revolutionized what we were doing in the Premier League. I think it was the 2000, 2001. And I suddenly realized that, if you can understand what actually a player does on the field of play, i.e., movements and speed and accelerations and decelerations, it can be quite relevant to return to play. It can be quite relevant to how you rehabilitate these athletes and even how you train these athletes. Because at that time, we didn't really have all of the data to understand the ins and outs of the intricacies of the sport from a game perspective. So this really revolutionized what we're doing. But what I found was I was spending time on computer systems, looking at one system for my medical notes, another system to look at the Prozone data, another system to look at the heart rate data, and it just started to grow. And I was very much like, I haven't got time for this. What I love being is a practitioner and getting players fit. And at that particular point in time, we had a lot of injuries at Leeds United, and we were in the Champions League, and my job as the head of department was to get our team together to get these guys out and playing. So, sort of the idea of having a one-stop shop to bring all this data in and centralize it sort of evolved. And then I ended up being on the lecture circuit, as you do, and various different conferences you've been asked to talk at. And I met the gentleman Ram, who created Prozone, and we got chatting, and I told him about my idea, not really understanding about software. And he had sold Prozone, and I approached him and sort of said to him, look, I've got some good ideas here, but I don't know how to plug that in and develop it. So we formulated Apollo, and we were really fortunate because we landed Manchester United as our first client. So in essence, we worked with Manchester United to build their product. Over the years of building our first product, we learned a lot of lessons. We learned lessons on everyone wants something different. We learned lessons that you engineering costs a lot of money. So if a team wanted us to change something within the structure of the database, we would need to engineer that front end, back end. We need to debug it. It's very expensive. So we learned a lot of lessons from the version one of the system. And then I took over the company in probably about 5 years ago. And what I realized was that all these systems on the market, Kipman, Conduct, Coach Me Plus, Smartbase, that they can only adapt so much. And then what I also realized is over that journey is that whenever we needed to change something, it was very difficult to change it. And the system really didn't have the best data visualizations that we could possibly do. And because we were confounded by the actual type of code and the structure of the database. So as technology evolved, I decided that, the system that we originally built and the systems that are on the market, in my view, are a bit antiquated. And therefore, we need to think about this very differently. So there evolved Apollo V2, which was when I took over the company. And literally, I started again. I basically spent 3 years, brought some very intuitive people on board, like yourself, Tony Strudwick, Peter Vint, and just literally found out what people are doing with data, what they're not doing with data, what they want to do with data, what the systems that they're using can't do, what the frustrations are with the systems they do. And over time, we developed this sort of ecosystem rather than a box that you have to work within the confines of the box. Because we built it on a loose framework, we were able to engineer things in the back end to allow the user to change something without needing engineering and to do it in a very simple and fast way. And that's why we are where we are today. And we're obviously not stopped doing that engineering. As you know, we're continuously updating and innovating what we're doing. But my whole view is that it's an ecosystem rather than a box. And the boxes are becoming very antiquated and dated. And unless you have the ability to keep updating the box and changing it on the fly, people's views of what they're doing with data now are going to be different in the next 2, 3, 4 years, and obviously are different now to what they were doing, even working with ourselves and our clients, the last 3 or 4 years. So that's sort of the sort of synopsis of the Apollo V2 and the Apollo journey for me.
You know, and I agree with you there, because I think as an industry, like, we've fallen into this data and technology age, and sometimes it's to our detriment because, you know, we're trying to advance, we're trying to squeeze out the one percenters in order to help our athletes, you know, perform better or keep them, you know, availability on the court or on the field, right? So we're in this data age now, we're in this technology age. And like you were saying, like, you've been around, you know, you've been in the industry for almost 30 years and you've been at the highest level. And again, when you were going around and seeing what other people were doing, you've seen a lot of what teams do in various sports all over the world. So, you know, on your travels, you know, what are some of the things that you've seen that teams are doing that they're going wrong in the era of data management?
Well, I think the first thing is injury prevention. I don't think is being done very well anywhere. And secondly, I think people aren't looking at the availability stats of athletes. I think there's so much smoke and noise out there, and people have been sold on, you know, oh, do this and it will give you this data, and do that and give you this data, which is good if you're, for instance, looking at products that are on the market in the weight room, like Perch or Vowed or, you know, Bridge. You know, they're giving you a figure to look at that you're seeing some improvement of an exercise that you want to do. But in the bigger scheme of things, my view is, so what? Because at the end of the day, what's most important is that athlete available to play? And when that athlete goes on that field or on that court, are they optimizing everything that they need to do? And are they getting better in what they're supposed to do? So it doesn't matter, in my view now, how much they can bench press or how quick they can jump or how much bigger and faster they can be. Because if they can't relate that to what they do on the field or on the court, it's irrelevant. They play the sport on the field, on the court. They don't play it in the gym. So I understand about, obviously, athletic development, and I completely understand that the technology is there to show that there's that development. And obviously, you and I both have used it. We do use it. I use it in rehabilitation of athletes, use it in basic development of athletes from youth all the way through. I think it's very good. But the point is, you're missing the big point, the big picture. What you really should be doing is looking at the game information that you have, whether that's GPS data, but also the statistics. Just because you can run faster on a pitch, but is that running faster on a pitch relevant to actually scoring a touchdown or making 40 points in a basketball game? Because that's what's relevant, not the fact that you can run faster. If you're running faster, is it having an effect on your performance? And that's the thing that I think people are actually not looking at. And as we've had many discussions and within our ecosystem, is like, well, we can take game statistics, we can take video, we can take GPS data, and we can overlap it in a visualization to show those side of the seesaw, if you like, and then also what you're doing in the weeks, months, years before that to show that player development, player improvement. And that's the bit I think people are missing. And I think the second point is that what you talked about is the availability. It's no good having all this technology if the player base is injured. You know, are your availability stats, you know, in the 90s for games? Set that KPI.
So do you think
that should be your number one KPI, Mike?
Yeah. Well, do you think, like, we're getting in our own way? Like, we've got all this information available to us and we're not really sure, you know, what's useful, what's not useful. Like, you know, do you feel that we're getting in our way and that's why injuries are not getting any better or worse? Or in some cases they are. In some competitions, you look at the NFL, it's highly publicized. You know, every training camp, you've got these horrendous injury tolls, right? So do you feel like we're getting in our own way and we're not looking at in the right directions? Like, what do you think there?
I agree. Yes, 100%. I think we've lost our way. I remember when I was at the Knicks, I basically was really the first person to bring catapult into the NBA. And no one knew what it was. But at Chelsea, you know, we'd been using GPS data. Like you, when you were at the Rabidars, you would have been using GPS data, you know, in the mid to early 2000s. So you were you'd be used to looking at player load, load per minute, accelerations, decelerations, you know, high intensity sprints. All these things we were looking at in 2004, 2005. Come to the NBA in 2008 and they weren't looking at anything. Now everyone's looking at everything. But the problem is, as you know, you open up Pandora's box looking at GPS data, right? So you get swamped in what information do you think is relevant to look at. But the point is, what information that you're looking at is relevant to what is actually happening in the game. Because my view is, it doesn't matter if you can run an extra 2 miles per hour. Are you effective in running those extra 2 miles per hour? And that's the bit I think people are missing. And I also think that we get so swamped in all this data. And I'm telling you, as a CEO of a data company, we get too swamped in this data that we're actually not going back to our practical skills, our eyes, our feel, our touch, our knowledge, our experience. We're moving away from it, and we're walking around with clipboards and sheets of paper and numbers. And it's not, you know, there is a slight art to what people do. And that bit, especially in my world, in the physical therapy world, I think people are going completely away from actually, you know, learning the basics about like movement screens. I'll give you an example. I was at a very well-known sports performance center today. And I watched all the athletic trainers and the physios walk around and do this screening with clipboards. And they're taking measurements on absolutely every part of the body, passively.
Like paralysis through analysis almost.
And I was like, they must spend 50 minutes analyzing this athlete's passive range of movement, right? And every joint, singularly. But you look at it and you think, well, that guy will never, ever move that joint singularly. The joints were moving in collaboration. The muscles will move the arm. The muscles will move the leg. So therefore, if there's a slight restriction passively here, is that really relevant to what he does actively or what she does actively? And I think we've just gone completely the other way. I think the basic schools of like watching someone move, watching someone stand, watching someone balance, watching someone rotate, watching someone do a single leg dip, watching someone jump, watching someone land. The passive ranges of movement, in my view, are relevant to that. Unless they've actually got an injury. But this was a screen. This is an athletic screen. And I just think we've gone so far one way. And I think that's another reason why we're not then looking at, we're caught within the weeds. We're not looking at the simple stuff. The availability is as a department, your strength and conditioning, your sports science, your masseurs, your athletic trainers, your physios, your doctors, is your availability stats improving? Are you reducing injuries that you feel you could reduce? So like look at hamstrings in the Premier League, right? They're going through the roof. But we've got all this technology. We've got Vowed. We've got Kangatech. We've got Nord boards. We look at asymmetry. We do this. We do that. Where's the relevance of it? Because your hamstrings are going up. They're not going down. They're getting worse.
And then you definitely have a real, then
you,
the,
you look at,
the
teams,
board,
you look at
we?
Teams around the world, right? Look at Chelsea. You look at Chelsea and look at Conte. The guy's had 3 or 4 hamstring injuries over 2 or 3 seasons. 3 or 4 or 5, and has had to have surgery this year on a hamstring injury. So if you're doing all this testing and you're then taking that data and utilizing that data to whatever you're doing with it, well, it's not working in that case, is it? And
well,
I think
I
people are just getting completely lost with it.
No, I agree.
And I think the other thing is, you know, the question I'd love to be people to be really honest, who are sort of listening to this, is how much do they influence the change with the coach? At the end of the day, is the coach just going to do whatever the coach wants to do?
Yeah.
Because if the coach is going to do whatever the coach is going to do, right, then all this stuff that you're doing is completely irrelevant. What you should be thinking about is how do I influence the coach? How do I tell the coach that, say, for instance, Conte or whoever it would be in the world needs to just, we need to be smart with this for the next 3 weeks, whether it's a return to play or whether it's basically pre-season, which is classic, like you say, NFL injuries in pre-season, all that stuff that we've looked at around NFL injuries in pre-season, day 3 to 10. It's horrendous. If you're ever looking at risk management, or you're an insurance company and you're looking at risk management in the NFL, day 3 to 10 is your danger zone. Well, you know, you've got 6 weeks, 8 weeks, even 10 weeks if you go into the season to do a proper built out pre-season schedule. But you've got ruptured Achilles, ACLs, you know, it's like, well, it's, and then also you can be specific on the type of injuries that you're having for the particular type of positions. So clearly they're not either coming back into camp conditioned well enough. You're not putting injury prevention strategies in around, for instance, tendons. You're not looking at the age of the athlete. You're not looking at all the scientific stuff that we know has relevance